Welcome to Managing AML. I'm Dr. Farhad Ravandi. In today's presentation, I will review exploring epigenetics in AML oncogenesis. In this video, I will explain the various epigenetic pathways that have been implicated in the pathogenesis of acute myeloid leukemia, including DNA methylation and, to a lesser extent, histone acetylation and histone methylation. We will also explore the associated genetic mutations and what this means for clinical practice. I will also cover some of the current clinical trials and best practices focused on epigenetic therapies and how to apply this data to the management of patients with acute myeloid leukemia. Let's begin. So just briefly, epigenetics refer to heritable changes in gene expression that are not coded in the primary DNA sequences. Epigenetic changes are potentially reversible and represent the target for therapy. And overall, there are three main mechanisms used to initiate and sustain epigenetic silencing of genes in various cells, which include DNA methylation, histone modification, and RNA-associated silencing. This slide is here just to show you what I mean by epigenetics. These mice are genetically identical, and they have essentially identical DNA sequence. However, as you can see, the coat is very different in terms of color, and this is because of different expression of genes related to epigenetic expression. Another way to describe this is that human cells all have entirely the same exact DNA sequence. However, as we all know, cells in the body are very different with various functions, and this is dependent on epigenetic silencing or activation of various genes. There are two major mechanisms of epigenetic silencing of genes that have been previously described. As I mentioned, RNA silencing is also important, but DNA methylation and histone modification is something that has been studied in the lab and in clinically over the last couple of decades. Cytosine DNA methylation is a mechanism of gene silencing. There are cytosine residues that can be methylated by DNA methyl transferases to produce methylated cytosines, and these typically are carried in CpG islands, which are small stretches of DNA, about 500 to 2,000 base pairs, in which the CpG dinucleotides occur at increased frequency. These areas are frequently located at the beginning of the transcription start sites of genes, and they're present at only about 5% to 10% of their predicted frequency. Why they are important is, as they get methylated, they lead to gene silencing. So for example, here you can see that when the CpG islands are not methylated, the gene is expressed, but the methylations of these transcription start sites results in silencing of the imprinted genes and inactivation of the genes, or lack of their functions in the appropriate cell. And this is again important in cancer because it is believed that the number of tumor suppressor genes, or genes that are essentially modulating and preventing carcinogenesis, that are silenced by various silencing mechanisms such as epigenetic silencing. This is probably a fairly old slide. A number of these genes have been tried to be identified, and as you can see here, the number of candidate genes have been described both in myelodysplastic syndrome as well as in acute myeloid leukemia, where they appear to be silenced, and are their silencing is important in the pathogenesis of MDS and AML. And a lot of these genes are believed to be silenced by the hypermethylation of the promoter regions as I described earlier. Why is this important? As the enzyme that is important in methylation of DNA is DNA methyltransferase, which sits on the transcription fork and is responsible for completely copying the methylation pattern of the genes in the daughter cells when the cell divides. Now, if you have a DNA methyltransferase inhibitor, as you can see at the bottom left of the slide, you can actually prevent this methylation in half of the DNA, and so the cell becomes hemimethylated. And then if you continue to do this with subsequent cell divisions, you can eventually make that segment of DNA unmethylated, and obviously this will lead to the activation or reactivation of the genes that have been previously silenced. Now, you can imagine if this is in a leukemic cell or an MDS cell, and there are genes that have been silenced by hypermethylation, and you're reactivating them, you can actually promote the differentiation of these cells and allow them to lose their AML phenotype and eventually differentiate and eventually die of senescence. And this has been the subject of hypomethylating therapy, the basis of developing hypomethylating agents. So there are now two hypomethylating agents that are FDA approved and commercially available, azacitidine as well as decitabine. As I mentioned, both of these agents are FDA approved in the US for treatment of patients with myelodysplastic syndrome, and also approved in Europe for treating AML as well as MDS. In the US, both of these agents, decitabine and azacitidine, are commonly used for the treatment of older AML patients who are deemed to be unfit to receive traditional cytotoxic chemotherapy in the form of cytarabine and anthracycline. The agents work very similar, again, by inhibiting DNA methyltransferases. But please remember that these agents are nucleoside analogs, and so they do have cytotoxic properties when they are used in high doses. So if you're used in high doses, they act more like nucleoside analogs and actually cause cytotoxicity. Whereas at low doses, by inhibiting DNA methyltransferases, as I mentioned earlier, they reactivate epigenetically silenced genes and allow differentiation of leukemic cells to mature cells. As I mentioned, both of these drugs are approved for treating MDS in the US and are commonly used for treating older AML. And the reason for this is based on a couple of randomized studies that have clearly demonstrated that they can be beneficial in older AML patients. So this one, the azacitidine AML-001 trial, randomized older patients with AML who were considered not great candidates for a traditional cytotoxic chemotherapy to receive either azacitidine or conventional care strategies. And the conventional care regimens were either low-dose RSC or supportive care, or in some patients, chemotherapy. And as you see, this randomized study showed that using azacitidine in this specific older AML population does produce improvement in median overall survival from 6.5 months in the conventional care regimen to 10.4 months in the azacitidine-treated patients. A somewhat similar study was conducted using decitabine, and here patients, again older AML patients, were randomized to receive either decitabine or supportive care, perhaps with the addition of hydroxyurea. And again, this did show an improvement in overall survival when the eventual number of patients were assessed. When the original assessment was done at 90% of events, the p-value was not significant, but with the total population and total follow-up, you can see there was an improvement in survival, be it modest. So both these drugs do have some modest improvement in outcomes in older AML patients, and that's why they are both now in the NCCN guidelines for unfit elderly patients. There are now second generation hypomethylating agents in development and in clinical trials. Guadecitabine is a dinucleotide of decitabine and deoxyguanosine that increases the in vivo expression of decitabine by protecting the molecule from deamination by cytidine deaminase, which is essentially the enzyme that causes limiting drug exposure time to cancer cells. This prolonged exposure is believed to improve the demethylation profile and hopefully to improve the efficacy of the agent. And clinical trials of this agent are ongoing, including randomized trials, which hopefully will let us know if this is a more potent demethylating agent. But also of interest is the fact that we have been able to identify a number of genetic mutations in patients with AML. This study by Washington University is pivotal, and they examined cells from 200 AML patients by both whole genome and whole exome sequencing, and they identified about 23 commonly mutated genes that are shown in the next slide. Do include genes such as DNMT3A, IDH1 and IDH2, as well as TET2. And why this is important is these genes are involved in the control and management of the epigenetic machinery of the cell. TET2, IDH1 and IDH2, as well as DNMT3A, are critical enzymes in the DNA methylation and demethylation pathways. And so one could imagine that in the cells that these genes are mutated, there is perturbance and disturbance of the epigenetic machinery, and potentially these agents can be targets for drug development and modifying epigenetic system. IDH mutations, for example, occur in about 10 to 20% of patients with AML. IDH1 and IDH2 are enzymes in the normal Krebs cycle. They convert isocitrate to alpha-ketoglutarate, which is important in a number of enzymatic reactions within the cell, including some of the epigenetic enzymatic reactions involving TET2. And when these genes are mutated, instead of the normal product alpha-ketoglutarate, an aberrant product, 2-hydroxyglutarate, is produced, which interferes with these normal epigenetic mechanisms. So because of this, there has been an interest in developing IDH inhibitors, and a number of them have already been in clinical practice. AG221 is an IDH2 inhibitor that has been evaluated in patients, mainly patients with relapse and refractory AML who have IDH2 mutation. This study was a very important study because first, it showed that the agent is a very well-tolerated drug. AG221 is associated with relatively little toxicity, and patients could stay on it for a long period of time, many of them for months. And more importantly, continued therapy actually led to improvement of responses in some patients. Overall, about 40% of patients had a response, including about 20% with a complete response in this relapse refractory population. And that's important because, again, this is an oral agent and is well tolerated. So when you produce 20% CR, that's clearly a significant response. Another drug, AG120, is an IDH1 inhibitor, which is also being evaluated in clinical trials, mainly in the relapse and refractory patients with IDH1 mutation. And again, this is an oral drug that is well tolerated with relatively little toxicity, and the patients again remain on it and can continue taking it for a protracted time. And again, actually, with both these drugs, the myelosuppression can actually improve while patients continue to take the drug without achieving a response. So platelet count may improve, so patients can continue. And again, some of the responses occur late after several months of therapy. Other IDH inhibitors are also being developed. This is an agent called IDH305. And again, similar to the two previous agents, it's a well-tolerated drug. And the early reports suggest that there is similar activity and similar tolerability with this agent in IDH-mutated or IDH1-mutated agents. So I think we will hear a lot more about these ITH inhibitors in the future, especially that many of them will be combined with other agents such as hypomethylating agents, as well as potentially with chemotherapy. To conclude, I would like to leave you with these key takeaway points. There is increasing understanding of epigenetic and genetic mechanisms of leukemogenesis, and this has led to a number of specific epigenetic and genetic modifiers being developed. And there are ongoing clinical trials exploring these agents and in combination. So as I mentioned, we will see combinations of hypomethylating agents with IDH inhibitors, and potentially in future, when we have other agents modifying the epigenetically important mutations, we will likely see further combinations of these drugs. There are better assays to monitor response, including using minimal residual disease, which will help us potentially identify patients who are responding early and removing patients who are not responding to other strategies. So at the end, I would like to thank you for viewing this activity. Thank you very much.